Hello everybody, I'm your host Harold Curtis, and I'd like to welcome you to The Space Industry by SatSearch, where we share stories about the companies taking us into orbit. In this podcast, we delve into the opinions and expertise of the people behind the commercial space organizations of today, who could become the household names of tomorrow. Before we get started with the episode, remember you can find out more information about the suppliers, products, and innovations that are mentioned in this discussion on the global marketplace for space at satsearch.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's episode of the Space Industry Podcast. Thank you very much for spending time with us here today. Now, I've got a very interesting guest for us to talk to today, Arvind Ravichandran, the founder of TerraWatch Space, which is an Earth observation insights company that he'll explain more about in just a moment. But I want to pick his brain today about the Earth observation sector. We deal with a huge number of suppliers and buyers in this area with missions in various different ways. So there's always a lot going on in this area, and it gains a lot of attention as well, I think, both inside and outside the industry, because of some of the obvious and some of the not so obvious benefits and projects that are going on that can bring real value to the rest of the world. So Arvind, thank you very much for being with us today. And yeah, if to set the scene, could you give our listeners a bit of an overview of your work and the industry and of TerraWatch Space?
Brilliant. Thanks for having me, Havel. Yeah, as you said, my name is Arvind. I run TerraWatch, which is a strategic consulting and market intelligence firm focused on the Earth observation sector, exclusively on Earth observation, sometimes going into the wider space industry. I've been running TerraWatch for the last couple of years. Essentially, I got into the industry in 2017, so about 7 years ago. And I joined in the consulting side of the business. So I was doing a lot of consulting work with PwC. So we did work with European Space Agency, European Commission, and a lot of governmental clients. And I think my journey with Earth observation started at that point. Before that, I used to be in the software world before I got into the space industry. But yeah, since getting into space, I realized there's a lot of value observation. Well, I gathered that we are gathering a lot of data from space, and I was not sure why it was not very mainstream or as mainstream as it should have been. There is only one mainstream application from satellite data, which is weather. Apart from weather, I can't think of others that have become as mainstream as weather. That kind of got me curious, and I started going into a rabbit hole of Earth observation, understood where the market is, where it's going. In 2018-19, the industry was picking up. There was a lot of Earth observation startups coming about. So I realized it's worth just focusing on this sector alone, because the applications of this works across different sectors and different industries. So I figured that it's worth diving deep into this one. And yeah, that kind of started TerraWatch as a journey. I started writing a little bit. I started doing some consulting work. And so far over the last couple of years, the consulting work has grown. The newsletter work has also grown. So far, so good. To talk about TerraWatch quickly, so as I mentioned, two main kind of facets of the business. One is the consulting business, which is typical consulting, but focused on Earth observation. So typically the kind of assignments are go-to-market strategy work, market analysis, due diligence, commercial strategy, and it's with stakeholders throughout the industry. So it is Earth observation companies, it is the space agencies, it is investors for commercial due diligence, and also end users of Earth observation. So kind of work across the value chain and across the industry, if you will. And the second part is more the market intelligence side, which is more through the newsletter. Again, that started out as a hobby, but then eventually it gained a bit of prominence just because I started it because I couldn't find a resource that was tracking all the developments in Earth observation, especially focusing on what's happening on the application side as well, meaning we'll probably talk about the applications and the so what of Earth observation. Decided to focus a lot on that with the newsletter. So that gained prominence, and eventually that kind of became there's a paid version of the newsletter, and that kind of became, a second business arm. And the most recent one, the third one, is more the event. The first event, again, we'll probably talk about that as well, EO Summit. So that's probably going to be the third kind of facet of the business that's happening right now as we speak. So yeah, that's a quick overview of TerraWatch.
Excellent. Let's dive into the area. Now, there, like I say, we have a lot of exposure at SatSearch to the Earth observation industry, and things can move pretty fast, but as with everything in space, there are always long timelines for missions and services to mature, and so the progression is never linear, never regular. So it's always very interesting to take the temperature of the industry at different times. Yeah, I think if we could just discuss what you're seeing in terms of changes and trends in the industry, specifically if we could start with missions and services, new technologies and indeed operating models that are coming online. What's standing out to you in this area in 2024?
Yeah, I think obviously, Serge, you're probably tracking a lot of the trends on the hardware side of the business, eventually also the operating models. A lot of what I'm going to say is not going to be very surprising to you. But then I think if I were to start from just upstream and then go downstream, so upstream, if you look at satellites and technologies, so obviously from an operating model perspective, the satellite as a service model is getting a lot of prominence, simply a result of a lot of countries getting a lot more interest in launching their own assets. So the satellite as a service model just enables that even more. They don't have to wait 5 years for them to launch a satellite. They can go buy things off the shelf, or companies can do that for them, and they can actually have assets ready as soon as they sign the contract, because some of these companies already have assets online. The satellite as a service model is, again, making a big difference in terms of how assets are launched and why they are launched. And going deeper into what kind of technologies and instruments are coming online, and obviously there's not many new instruments because we don't have new instruments to invent. It's more going to be bettering the instruments that already exist and combining them efficiently. So I think the multi-sensor satellites are becoming more interesting. Having more than one sensor in one satellite is, again, getting a lot more prominence. And obviously, there are some engineering challenges to get around that. But then there are companies that are, you know, starting to work on that. So there's that part on the instrument side. But also, to name a couple of instruments, we have LiDAR company that is coming up that is positioning LiDAR from space. There's obviously SARs getting better in terms of resolution and the antennas. They go together, both the instrument and the antenna. There's also the kind of diversification, if you want, from multispectral to hyperspectral and thermal infrared. So again, those are all not new, but then we're seeing a lot more instruments come online with a lot more quality and better resolution, better signal-to-noise ratio. So it just makes the downstream applications more interesting. And maybe one last thing about the technology side is more edge computing. So there's a lot of providers that are kind of demonstrating their onboard computers and onboard processing instruments, where you have the ability now to upload your code to space and process the image live onboard the satellite without needing to downlink. Again, still in demonstration stage, but I think this year we're going to see a lot more instruments and technologies be demonstrated, and also that edge computing as a concept go a bit more mainstream. Those are the things that kind of, I guess, are in the spotlight for this year, at least from an upstream point of view. And I think downstream, there's obviously a lot of development across the value chain. At least at TerraWatch, kind of look at the industry in five different segments, like data, which is what we talked about, where data is all about satellites and instruments and what is the satellite really doing, the data segment. And obviously, what do we do with that data? How do we disseminate it? How do we process it? Where the second segment, the platform layer, if you want, comes in. So the platform layer, we've seen the development of, or the introduction of, a lot more platforms in the market, whether they are marketplaces that just give access to 10 different types of imagery from 10 different providers, or go one step further and provide analytics or allow users to process them on their platform. I think that's happening as well on the platform side. And I think third layer is what we call analytics. And edge computing is trying to disrupt that, right? Like, usually analytics used to be part of platform, where you need to go and use a platform to actually count the number of trees or detect the type of crop. But now with edge computing, the promise is, we have yet to verify what the reality looks like, but at least the promise is you can get these analytics on board, just downlink that analytics, or maybe what is the location where the wildfire started. So you just get the location, as opposed to waiting for downloading the image, processing, and then figuring out where the fire started. That, again, analytics layer is being disrupted. We're also seeing, obviously, introduction of companies downstream, which is the insights and the application layer, where you have an ag tech company starting to be founded, or a forest carbon company, or an insurance company. All of them are companies that are founded, but then they happen to use satellite data because that is the best source for solving the problem. That's, again, starting to come about. Usually, we don't talk about that much in the space industry because it's a little too downstream for the industry. But then with those observation, that is really the market. If you take away defense, which is still 70% of the overall market, the rest of the 30% comes from the sector that usually space industry does not go into. But then really, that's what we're launching satellites for, at least Earth observation satellites, for the adoption by those sectors. So yeah, so that's an overview of what's coming up. And I guess maybe there are probably more. I wrote a an overview of what happened in 2023, a review of what happened in 2023, and outlook for 2024. I'm trying to also use what I wrote there to talk about here, but I think this is what I talked about there as well.
Great, Aaron. Thank you. That's a really good overview of the sorts of technologies and operating models and things that you're seeing in the Earth observation industry. I like that you covered how these missions are put together in terms of the software as a service model, satellite as a service model, etc., and then also the hardware and the software that's on board the satellite and how you collect that data, what sensors and cameras, etc., you're using, and then how you're using that data in increasingly more sophisticated ways with the edge computing and the different distribution of tasks undertaken by platforms that are owned by the different operators in the value chain. And obviously, you covered quite a bit of the end user segment there as well, those companies that are actually deploying satellite data in their businesses to create some value. I wonder if there's anything else on the end user side that you're seeing or anything that you think is changing. I know you spend a lot of time engaging with this group of people. So yeah, is there anything you could share with us that's standing out to you there?
Sure. I think there is increasing awareness of the potential of satellite data among end users. And I usually split the categories into about two or three. The first category is more defense. Obviously, defense has been the historical user, the first user of satellite data from the very beginning. And they are a segment where it's very kind of policy-driven, budgetary. Obviously, their requirements are also evolving with the changing geopolitics. Keeping the defense segment aside, where obviously the defense industry gets a lot of attention and there's a lot of awareness about what's going on there. So sticking to the two other categories, and I put them into two categories. One is more historical, traditional users who have been using Earth observation for a while. And then the second category is more like the emerging users, the users that are starting to use Earth observation. In the first category of ones that are historical users, they are basically like the agriculture industry, the oil and gas industry, and maybe some parts of the mining industry. It's important to realize that there are probably some customers within these industries who actually are in the second segment where they haven't used before and they are emerging users. But then just as a sector, these three sectors have used or continue to use Earth observation data, and they've used it quite prominently over the past years. But I think with them, it's more about how do we make it a lot more strategic? If you're an agriculture company or if you're an oil and gas company or a mining company, you used Earth observation on demand whenever you wanted because it's the best way to solve your problem. For them, it's more about figuring out what is the strategic way to start thinking about this technology. Because if you take oil and gas, it's not just about exploration anymore. They are starting to have to report their methane leaks, for instance. It's getting a lot more use cases are coming about, more capabilities are coming about. Maybe they couldn't think of satellite as monitoring their pipeline on a daily basis. But today we have data, high resolution data that's coming online and going to come online more over the next years. So for them, it's about they don't have to run drones, or maybe they're going through these questions of we used to fly drones every week, but then now we have satellite taking pictures every day. So should we use satellites or think about using satellites to monitor the state of our pipelines, right? That's just one example. Same case with agriculture. They probably use satellites probably every now and then to verify the state of their crop health or kind of predict their crop yield. But again, now we are taking pictures every day, which means that you can gather trends better and predict better in terms of crop yield. So for them, it's more, and also there's agriculture and sustainable agriculture are coming online. So having data every day and on a continuous basis is going to be very useful for them. There's also a lot more strategic thinking about what this technology represents. And on the second category, obviously, the kind of difference here is the first one was about how do we figure out better uses of satellite data that is a lot more strategic to our organizations. For the second category, where I put in like a bunch of insurance companies, I guess utility companies, and for also the emerging applications of carbon markets as well. So if you think about the second category, it's a lot more, what are the use cases that are possible, right? What else can satellite data do? Or because it was not used a lot in our industry, we have to figure out and find the best way for us to use this data within our industry. So if you take insurance, property insurance, or giving better claims or validating claims better, before maybe they used a bit of drone data or waited for people to report their own data and send someone to verify if their house was actually burned down or if their house was actually flooded. But now you have satellite data that's available on demand. So that's a new use case that's coming in to change the way they do insurance or to predict what the price of premium is over an area based on the flood risk. Because today you have flood risk that is being estimated and updated on a daily basis, which means that people who are having property or have some kind of infrastructure in low flood-lying areas can have different pricing models to those who are not. But again, those kind of use cases are being explored. So I guess exploration is an important word that comes to mind for the second category, where there's a lot of emerging applications. So where there's a lot of also truth to be figured out, right? And of course, satellites are great for forest carbon or for insurance, but then what is the actual use is being figured out, and where is its positioning compared to what they did before? Because these kind of companies still, they did, insurance model existed. There are some use cases where things are starting, right? Like for carbon, what is the way to measure carbon? Satellites are great, but then insurance industry existed before. Agriculture existed before. For a lot of these industries and categories of end users, it's also about figuring out what it really means for them, and also then going deeper into what kind of technology actually makes sense for them. Do they need to care more about SAR, or is it a combination of optical and SAR? Or what is the role of hyperspectral? So I think once they figure out the importance of this technology, they can then get deeper into what are the capabilities available today, right? If they figured out that having SAR available 10 minutes after a flood occurred, then it's going figuring out, does that exist in the market today? And if it does exist, how can we partner with them? How can we work with those earth observation companies? And I think that's what's going on the end user side.
Interesting. So it's, yeah, there's a lot of variables. It's not as simple as what your requirements are. If you don't know, if you start at that start point and you don't know what's possible in the industry, then yeah, you're always going to have a limited view. So I can see where there's plenty of space for people like yourself to help those companies out with these problems. And yeah, I guess on that, you mentioned briefly you're holding an event, your first event later this year in London. I wondered if you could just explain why, what you're trying to do with the event, and why you thought now is a good time for it.
Yeah, 100%. I think that there was never really a plan when I started TerraWatch. I knew that there was going to be consulting. I knew there was going to be analysis and market intelligence. But yeah, events was not really in any of my plans. But then I think what the motivation really came from, a combination of speaking with end users and figuring out the kind of things that they're doing and also the kind of information they're looking for, and figuring out how to make that happen in a way that is a lot more scalable for myself, but also a lot more impactful for the industry. Because for a lot of end users, they need a lot of awareness, and they need a lot of also understanding the potential of what this technology means. And today there are not many places where they can go to figure out what this technology can actually do for them. And I figured, I did a research of all the events out there, and I actually published it online for everybody to use. I did that last year and this year. But the aim of doing that was really to figure out, is there really an event today that I can recommend to an insurance company that I'm speaking with? Go check out this event and you can get to understand how other insurance companies are using, but also meet other agriculture companies who also have to measure the same thing that you want to measure to encourage that cross-pollination. And I looked through the list and I really couldn't find many events that I could recommend. And I also thought that from an Earth observation industry point of view, we are also at a stage where we need a lot of reality check of what really the end users want. Are we really building something that the end users will use? And I figured that existed very well for the defense sector, which is not surprising because uptake has been there for the last 30, 40 years. But then for commercial users, the two categories that I mentioned, who I've used, but then they have to figure out what's new. We've been using satellite data for 20 years, from Landsat to from today up to today, 15, 20 years. What's new? What has come about? What are the new capabilities for them to meet the Earth observation sector, but also the Earth observation sector to position itself and have encouraged that, or create a forum to encourage that connection building, and also for end users to actually see what the others are doing, because flood risk is needed for energy companies. It's also needed for insurance companies, and it's also needed for several other sectors and customers. So it's also a question of encouraging that cross-pollination of ideas, because at the end of the day, they are using the same data source and their overall strategy has not changed. What is the way for you to start using satellite data? You need to hire a team. You're an insurance company, you are an energy company, you are an agriculture company. You need to hire a team. You need to figure out who are the best data suppliers or the best platforms, and for them to have a forum where they can find each other, really. So encouraging this connection to happen was really the motivation. And yeah, and then because of kind of the exposure TerraWatch has had with end users and working with them, I figured that that is a forum that is needed. And so far, the the kind of validation has really come about, because there's a lot more excitement from the user side. I would say even more from the Earth observation side, more from the user side than from the Earth observation side, which actually validates what I was going for, where users really want to share what they're doing. And the Earth observation industry has to understand what are the different use cases. What is this big insurance company doing with satellite data, which is going to be a good event for just anyone, really. So these are the two kind of main focus audience. But then it's also for investors who really want to know, is there a market for Earth observation? Attend the event and you'll know. Because if you see that a big insurance company is using satellite data and they actually see big potential for the future, there's your validation. What more do you need as a validation, right? So for investors, that's good. And same for policymakers and government officials who are looking at, should we invest in the next Earth observation satellite? You go and attend the event, you figure out that this insurance company, maybe you didn't know that this insurance company was actually using data from a satellite that you launched 15 years ago, right? So also for them to come and get to know. So again, that's a motivation. It's purely based on what I've seen in the industry and also figured what is missing from the industry. So yeah, so the first edition is happening in mid-June, but my kind of aim, this one's happening in London, 3rd June, 13th and 14th. But my aim is to, if it's successful, then take it to other places of the world as well, because different, I guess, parts of the world also adopt differently, which is also one of my learnings, where, you know, if you look at Asia Pacific or Latin America or North America, they're not going to use the same way. They don't have the same needs. They may also not have the same suppliers. Maybe they need a different way of growing the ecosystem. So yeah, that's the vision as well in terms of how I see it growing. Does that make sense?
Fantastic. Yeah, absolutely. Good luck with it. And we'll share some links to, if anybody's interested, in the show notes. And yeah, see how it goes there. So to get back to the technology briefly, one aspect of this, which has come up a few times that I think is really interesting, is data fusion. So integrating the data sets from satellites with those collected from other sensors. It could be other satellites, could be Earth-based sensors, could be existing historical data sets, maps, other systems, whatever it is. How mature is the space industry in this area, do you think? Are you seeing data sharing standards and best practices from other fields being translated into space?
Yeah, it's a good question. Don't think there has been like as much progress as there should be in terms of standards, interoperability, but things are changing, things are evolving. There is a very open source centric approach here to encourage standards and interoperability, which in a way it's good, is the advantage because, you know, there can be a lot of standards that are proposed and people can work on one standard and improve it because everything is open source. And this is what you can take that from. What is the format for having data to how do you store data in a way that is easily searchable and indexable? So from everything from the format to metadata to how do you have one unified interface to task a satellite, right? So it applies to everything what I'm saying. Yeah, so the good thing is it's happening from an open source centric point of view. You won't have this one standard that is created by this one organization that everybody has to follow, which is a good thing. But the kind of the other side of the coin is it is an open source centric approach, meaning there is support today. Will there be for tomorrow? Which is kind of you know, true of any open source centric conversation. The same applies here. So we've seen a lot of kind of evolution in that over the last 3-4 years. One of my kind of worries is we have not seen a lot of interest or vision from the investment community. And I actually don't know what they think about this. Are they going to support companies? Do they that have an open source centric vision, or are they going to support companies that go for their proprietary solution and make that the standard? Obviously, from an investment standpoint, I guess they would want to support companies like that, but that's not great for the industry because then everybody has to follow that company standard. And I'm sure you're seeing that in software. And one of the baffling things about the space industry for me is we have actually seen more standards than upstream than we have standards downstream, which is a very baffling thing where, you know, you have a way that you are able to build a satellite as a service model where, you know what, you can take payload from supplier one, I don't know, reaction wheels or, I don't know, power systems from supplier two, and you combine together and you make that a satellite and you deliver it in a year and it will be launched. But then downstream, if you think like that, it's not really true. It's like even between providers, right? Like optical image from a free satellite Sentinel-1, and then this image also optical from a commercial provider, they didn't talk to each other until very recently, just within the same sensor. And if you go into multi-sensors, it becomes super complex because there are different formats. You can't overlay one sensor image over another sensor image, which is crazy to think because we've solved the problem of combining payloads and power systems and other subsystems from different suppliers, but we have not solved this one, which is a software problem, which should have been solved but it just tells you that there's not been a lot of software-focused innovation that has happened. But yeah, the good thing is it's changing and coming from my software world, which is why I thought companies released that API as an announcement where you have an API. For me, it was a bit weird because from the software world, API is how you go about doing things. You don't make an announcement that you have an API. That's how you do it. So for me, that was took a bit of time to get used to those things. So that's when I understood there's still a long way to go before we can actually create almost an engine where you can take data from, you talked about even different modality, like combining data from satellites with drones with something that was done on the ground. We have a long way to go, but that's the vision, right? That you have one platform, and that's when I think adoption will just increase and explode because you have at that time a way to take data from 5 different sources, 10 different sensors, fuse them together, and see what you can get out of it. But it's not possible today. So yeah, we have a bit of time to go before that happens.
Okay, great. Thank you. So we've talked a lot about where the situation with the industry is today. So I wanted to now just ask you a question on looking ahead to the next sort of few years. How do you see, that is a very broad question, I know, but the Earth observation sector evolving? And then to narrow it down again a little bit more, are there any missions planned for the next couple of years that you are particularly excited about or interested in?
Yeah, I think I mentioned edge computing. I really want to see what the use of it is because technologically it makes sense, but then commercially doesn't make sense. Again, from a defense standpoint, we might see some use cases. There are probably one or two use cases that are gaining a little more prominence, like vessel detection and kind of forest fires as well. So I think there are a couple of use cases that are getting prominence where having that data or even, you know, just some level of that information as fast as possible is useful. These two cases, finding an illegal vessel doing shipping or kind of being in an area where it's not supposed to be, knowing it right away is going to make police and legal enforcement easier. Same with forest fires. If people get that information in the next 5 minutes, they can recognize the firefighters better, right? So I think there are a couple of use cases where edge computing is getting a lot more prominent. So I'm seeing more missions launched with, and I'm sure you're seeing more interest for onboard computers on your marketplace as well. And we are also seeing a lot of companies coming about. So I'm waiting for that culmination where that final use case works. Now it's a bit fragmented and we also didn't involve end users as much, right? Like how many firefighters did you speak to ask what is the number of minutes that you would need and what information do you need? Do you need just a pinpoint location or do you need an image or do you need a bit of both? But I think that's starting to happen slowly. So I think same with insurance, right? Like when do you need that image right after a flood? So I think those kind of ecosystem conversations are starting to happen. And I think we're going to see some more edge computing missions focus on that and make that a lot more prominent and mainstream, number one. Number two, I think I'm looking forward to the multi-sensors that I mentioned before where we had to wait for an image where I think if we had the same platform hold more than one payload, then I think the possibilities actually become more interesting because if you were able to see change with hyperspectral and have the same area actually also imaged by a very high resolution optical or a SAR image, then I think the combination of that makes the image more interesting versus having, you know, the hyperspectral image in timestamp 1 and the SAR in timestamp 2 by the time the change has already happened, depending on what that change is. Having more than one sensor and one platform, again, there are a couple of companies working on it, so I think, but it can also be done via inter-satellite links. Yeah, it does not have to be via, but then the final use case is just seeing that very quickly. And I think we're starting to see inter-satellite links come about. So you have sent satellite 1 that's passing over an area and there's notice changed and then it is able to send a command to another satellite, which is actually trailing it. Then that's a better use case of how to plot that change without missing it. So I think it's a little more of an intelligent architecture setup, but I think that's, again, that's something that's I'm interested in, again, with a lot more, hopefully with a lot more involvement of the end user, because what's the point in just having this without really knowing whether it's useful or not? So I think this is the number two. Number three is probably more kind of sensors from a weather, atmospheric monitoring, climate point of view. We don't have many commercial weather satellites today, and we have some, but then most of our weather satellites are actually government owned. Even there's a lot of innovation happening. The missions of NOAA and EUMETSAT and JAXA, but we have to see a lot more for measuring ocean surface temperature or ocean surface winds, or to track precipitation better. There's a lot of instrument level work that needs to be done. In the past, I was involved with a company called Tomorrow.io, which was working on precipitation radars, so to track precipitation better. But I think there's more sensors to come. Whether or not, I think recently, I think Spire started offering reflectometry, where you use GNSS signals to measure soil moisture, again, which is an advanced way of measuring it. So I think we're probably going to see more instruments there. But yeah, I think there's a lot more happening on that front as well in the next couple of years.
Bit of a different question. Now, there's been a renewed interest in the last few years in deep space and cislunar, lunar exploration missions. We've seen, obviously, Intuitive Machines and the SLIM landing recently. And there's a lot of money going into this area. There's a lot of discussion about different operating models and potentially building bases and lunar landers, all sorts of things going on, really. Do you think that all of this interest, aside from the obvious greater interest in the space industry in general, do you think there are opportunities, potentially commercial opportunities, being created for Earth observation companies who obviously almost exclusively build systems for low Earth orbit?
Yeah, I think it probably would. I know of at least a couple of companies that have their goals set, not just for observing the Earth, but also for the Moon and other planets, which, again, a lot of what we know about remote sensing is overall spin-offs and spin-ins from looking at exoplanets or looking at other planets. And because at the end of the day, the optics and remote sensing as science is the same. So I guess there's a lot of synergies between those two segments, if you want, looking at Earth versus looking at other planets, whether it's the Moon or otherwise. So I think there's just going to be obviously a lot of learning. So the timeline is obviously going to be a bit different, right? So it's how soon do we need a lunar observation sector? Probably soon, right? If you're talking about, because today, even to figure out what really happened to that lander, is it actually there in that space? We are dependent on that one orbiter from NASA, and that's what we are able to figure out. And I think China also has one. And that's about it. So we don't have much observation going on. But then in the next 10, 15 years, if you're actually going to establish a base, you probably need a lot more observation capabilities. So I think there's going to be inevitably a lot of interest. And I think also from a defense point of view, to start, looking at if it's China or if it's another country, to figure out what they're doing and, what their activities are like, and also making sure if they are, following treaties that we have signed and such, right? So I think there's going to be some evolution in the observation sector, lunar observation. Similar thing applies to Mars as well, right? So there's, and I think obviously Moon is going to be the first rational step, just because that's where we're seeing a lot of activity. But I also think that this is not going to stop here. Whether it's companies that are going to build, and obviously for them, for some of them that are vertically integrated, they may need to have a different line of manufacturing, because maybe the Earth observation satellites have their own configuration and the lunar observation have their own. But I think overall as an industry, it's going to be very interesting, especially if the next 5-10 years prove to be what they are. But I have also seen enough or read enough space history over the last 30-40 years to know what can happen as a result of administrative changes, whether it's in the government or how their interests change. Hopefully this one stays. Looks like it's going to stay based on everything that has happened. But you never know with this industry, right? Just the dependency that is being built over the government, and even companies like SpaceX and Blue Origin, as much as they have support, they are going to be dependent on government initiatives, at least for now. Probably that's going to change. If they find a way, if we go completely private, then it's a different conversation. But at least today, that is not the case. It's still very public driven, and that comes with its own caveat of not being 100% dependent being one of them.
That's great. Thank you. I think it's a really good place to wrap up. We covered a whole lot of ground here. Thank you so much for sharing everything with us today. And yeah, finally, where should people go to find out more about you and your work?
Most of them is very public. So whether it's the newsletter, it's newsletter.terawattspace.com, or just if you want to learn about terawatts, so terawattspace.com. And if you want to learn about the event, it's eosummit.com. So I guess those are the three things, right?
Okay, great. Thank you very much. We'll put some links, like I say, to these different things in the show notes. Yeah, great conversation today. Thank you very much for spending time with us.
Thanks all. Nice chatting.
Great, thank you. And to all the listeners out there, thank you too for giving us your time today to listen to this latest episode of the Space Industry Podcast. We'll be back for more with other space companies, other industry personnel very soon. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Space Industry by SatSearch. I hope you enjoyed today's story about one of the companies taking us into orbit. We'll be back soon with more in-depth, behind-the-scenes insights from private space businesses. In the meantime, you can go to satsearch.com for more information on the space industry today, or find us on social media if you have any questions or comments. To stay up to date, please subscribe to our weekly newsletter, and you can also get each podcast on demand on iTunes, Spotify, the Google Play Store, or whichever podcast service you typically use.